Okay, let's start. We have a pretty good participation, I think. Let's start with the obvious, which is antitrust policy. Let me read it to everyone on the call. Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that the attendees adhere to the meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable U.S. state, federal, and foreign antitrust competition laws. Examples of such actions that are prohibited at Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at www.linuxfoundation.org/antitrust-policy. If you have questions about these matters, please contact your company counsel, or if you are a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Abdigroof of the firm Jemser Abdigroof LLP, which provides legal counsel to the Linux Foundation. So with that, I guess we are formally able to start the meeting. I have sent out an agenda a couple of days ago, so just to suggest and of course it's open, so if you'd like to add anything to the agenda, please do. We went through the antitrust policy. I would like Rose to update us on the survey and talk a bit more about the purpose of it and some of the questions and so on and so forth. And how was it also, because it's our first collaboration, how was it working in Hyperledger public sector working group and so on. Then we should have an update from Dr. Munir on the proposal for the call for papers for Hyperledger Global Forum, and a reminder that we still didn't get the proposal, but I would like to hear more about this work. And then we will have presentation from Dr. Munir on Smart Dubai as the last point. If you would like to add anything, we should. We can do it now, or we can do it towards the end of the call. So does anyone have any questions about the agenda? Okay, so with that, Rose, I guess I can give you the mic, virtual mic, and could you talk a bit more about the survey?
Sure. Hi, everybody. This is Rose. And thanks to everyone who helped contribute to the Hyperledger Public Sector Working Group survey. Just to refresh everybody's memories, we're circulating a somewhat comprehensive survey to all working group members. The reason being that we're a very diverse group, and we also have fairly low levels of information about who we are and why we're all here, and most importantly, what is it that everybody is motivated to do once they are here. So presumably the idea that we're a working group is that we'll be working on things. And so the categories of focus on where we might want to put our attention have been organized into the survey. The survey was sent out to everybody yesterday, and many thanks to Bobby who put it into the format it is now. It was a shared Google Doc. Thanks to Ken and to a few others who provided some commentary as well to tweak it. So I'm going to just quickly walk through what the sections of the survey are and explain why they're there. And to reiterate that everything is optional on the survey, as we all have our own reasons for being here and as much as we want to share, and with the knowledge that the information put in the survey will be made publicly available. So bear that in mind when filling it in, or we can discuss if there's some reason why that can't or shouldn't happen, but we're going in with the presumption that the results will be available to everybody in the group and shared. All right. So the first section is simply to identify yourself as much as you wish. It is ideal if you would put something in there that we could link to you so that we know you are the same person you are in the group, as well as why are you here. So some free text. Anybody else, if you want to interrupt at any time, just pop in. The first section, again, is, you know, more about yourself. What do you need? In the kind of like open texty sort of way, asking you from a couple different perspectives, as well as your experience with working on any projects involving Hyperledger, which is obviously optional, but very good to know about if you're in this group. It also asks what sorts of functional activities or contributions you'd like to make, so we can start to figure out who likes to do what and what kind of topics are speaking most to you. So that's the About You section. Fill in as much as you would like everybody to know. Obviously, the more information we have, the better formed the group will end up being. Section 2 is looking at the types of group work that we can do and helping vote on and develop priorities around different types of activities, because a working group can do many sorts of things, and it's good to know, are there really very strong clusters of activities or, you know, outputs that people really would like to work on versus very little interest. So the first focus area is developing repositories of information. So this is developing, or also just as useful, if not more so, locating repositories that would be useful, such as case studies, calendars, existing frameworks, and whatnot, and having this working group be a collection place for all sorts of resources that might help us as we work on our own projects. There's a 1 to 10 ranking. So just click one of those numbers to say how important this is to you. And then expressing which of these things you'd be interested in terms of, do you want to use them? Do you want to help build them? Do you want to actually have a long-term responsibility to keep them in order? And then a bit of free text about what would be useful. Focus area 2. All of these are structured in the same way, just different topics. The second one is project collaboration. So that's working together with peers from the public sector working group on making projects happen, developing policies, and other things that are creating new things that didn't exist. So the first one's pulling together stuff that does exist and organizing it so we can access it. The second is, let's make something new. And then the same types of questions of, do you want to be doing this kind of work and why? The third one is making this more of a network, so a community of people working together. How do we learn from each other, identify who other people are, have speakers, perhaps on a call-by-call basis or special events? Again, please rank, is this important, and how would you like to be community-oriented? What could you do? Finally, the fourth focus area is technical guidance. So this is if you are able to develop manuals or participate in trainings, do repository management, or anything else that you might define as improving the Hyperledger software itself on a technical side. Is this important to you? What would you like to do? How might you be able to do this? So that's the shaping, the culture and the shape and the focus of this group, so we can see if there are any clusters. The third section is about the Hyperledger Global Forum, which the survey provides some top-level explanation of, as well as the key due dates. So on July 13th, we need to have a proposal due, which is coming around the corner, actually, particularly when we're a bunch of people in disparate places. So, and I'm sure that Dr. Munir will be able to really help kickstart us on that. But this is a good way to help the group know what is your interest in this project as our first collaboration. Might you be coming? And then there are different areas of focus that Hyperledger Foundation puts out of areas where one could put in proposals. So if you could check off the ones that you feel like you might even be interested in, please let us know. And then the same for the operations topics. So there's a technical track and there's an operation track at the forum. And we need to try to figure out, is there any convergence around a topic we might want to do? And then some interest in what kind of panels or sessions formats. So that's it. So there's three sections. Whatever sections feel interesting to you, please put things in, and if they're not relevant, don't feel bound by them. And I'm going to pause there, except for to say it's been nice to be part of a first coordination and collaboration. And I'm sure that it'd be great to hear feedback about how that went for others and see if we can develop a culture of how we like to collaborate. All right, I'll stop. Thanks.
Thank you, Rose. That was very helpful. I will add that on the mailing list, I suggested that we put on ourselves a deadline on Tuesday or Wednesday next, before next call, so Tuesday in 2 weeks' time, for everyone to write out and participate in the survey, so that for the next call we can provide a summary and present it to the group. So please fill it out within the next week and a half, and make sure that if you feel that there are other people who are relevant and should either participate in the calls or fill out the survey, please forward it to them. It is completely open. It is not limited in any way. This group is open to everyone.
Hi.
So any comments, questions?
Yeah, I just have a comment. It's Bobby. The survey results are coming in through my email, and I set up a 4-page Excel worksheet. I'm sorry, a 4-sheet workbook that has for the 4 sections on the survey. And I've started, I just got the first result this morning from Ken, who is also in Boston. And so I put that in the first line. If people want to comment on this Excel worksheet, how to better organize it to collect the information, just go ahead and edit it. I'm just going to keep getting the information and populating the survey out as the results come in. But if anybody has any ideas on that survey Excel worksheet that I just shared, please edit it for me or update it so the information presented is how the group wants it. Thanks.
Thank you, Bobby. And if you could also send it out on email and not only in chat, that would be great.
No problem. I'll do that.
Any other questions or thank you. Any other questions or comments about the survey, or shall we move to the next point? Going once, going twice. Okay, Dr. Murnir, would you be so kind and provide us with some update on how is the proposal coming in, and when will you share it with the group, and what did you put in there?
Okay, so I was not able to share the proposal timely before now. You guys can hear me perfectly, right? Hello?
Sorry, yes.
What did you say? Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear very well.
Okay. So I was not able to send the proposal earlier before the call. My team was still finalizing it. So shortly after the call, you will receive this. What I'm actually doing is I was trying to come up with basically sections of the proposal, so of this proposal. So what we are actually trying to do is what are meaningful use cases for government, for the public sector, using blockchain? And more importantly, what is the approach government should be taking, you know, governments are in such a collaborative environment, you should be taking for these, for actually ideating and implementation of these use cases. So what, and kind of we were sharing our experience. And actually, the next present slide deck that I will share with you is kind of relevant to that. The experience that we initially did, that initially how we started, especially in our example of Dubai also, was that we started identifying use cases that, okay, this particular use case will be implemented. And when we did that, we realized that maybe we are not solving the actual problems, or we are not kind of getting the most benefit with this blockchain use case. We kind of changed our strategy mid-course, and which was actually to build networks first. So we created kind of divided all citizen experiences into sectors and created networks of the sector stakeholders. Example being healthcare is one, trade finance is another. So once we started building these networks and had design thinking sessions with these networks, so what happened was that we then came up with midterm and long-term kind of use cases and a roadmap towards that. So that approach in itself is something which we are kind of trying to write on. So that is one part of this proposal that we are submitting. So my team is actually just finishing it up shortly. We will send it out for comments to the forum, and then maybe over the next few days, if we can kind of brainstorm on it and try to finalize it within this week.
Thank you. And thank you for taking a lead on that as well. I suggest that once
my question to the question to the group is, question to the group, sorry, Marta, I just interrupted you, sorry. My question to you and others is this is the right direction for what we submit here, or we want to take a little bit different approach? That's my question.
Guy, what do you think?
Hi, this is Lennon. Sorry, I've been traveling, so I joined lately. But Dr. Munir, if I heard you rightly, it's you're reorganizing the, you might say, the approach in terms of categorization, categories or sections in terms of interest. So trade finance, for example, could be a capability which is process oriented. And if that is very impactful, if that is providing you with the right type of, you might say, interest and responses to solve a particular area of trade finance as a problem, I think that's a very good approach to get started with. And bear in mind, process is always improved over time. It's always a continuous improvement process. So it's a good start. I think, if no one else comes with a better suggestion, I would agree.
I didn't get your name, sorry. One interesting thing which I wanted to kind of mention here was that from our experience, what we have found is that in a way, blockchain is it's a completely different innovation process that it is being enabled this way. By that, I mean, when you take trade finance and let's take the trade finance example. So you have this continuous process improvement, as you were saying. But what is happening in case of when we are building a network is that because of blockchain, there are new possibilities that are there. So if you do not build a network, and if you do the traditional innovation model where, okay, do design thinking, you actually have very restricted future state that you come up with. On the other hand, if you build a network first, then somehow from our experience, we have seen that the future state is much more richer that we are seeing. That may be just a unique experience due to our own limitations here, or that may be how things are, things completely change when you kind of build these networks first.
And I understand that perspective, and it's a very good one. So, Marta, back to you.
All right. This is Rose jumping in. Thanks, Dr. Munir. It seems like looking forward to very much to reading this. It will be great for the group to see it also as they're filling out their surveys to advertise the survey again, and considering this as one of potentially several directions that might be taken in parallel to represent in December. But my question is actually about your networks concept. Who did you build these networks with, and how did you go about building them? This is out of curiosity. As you're talking about a new approach beyond some of the standard innovation frameworks to make the Hyperledger and blockchain an actually practical new innovation in practice.
In fact, this is all part of my presentation, but I can answer quickly here. See, our objective, the way we started was a bit different. We, in a way, took a leap of faith and decided that we will bring all of our city transactions on blockchain, all applicable transactions on blockchain. And what that meant was that we started identifying citizen journeys across the entire city, okay? And that was all kind of journeys. So it was not only government services, because the way things are in Dubai, separating on a user journey or on a citizen journey, separating private sector or public sector use cases is not possible. They are all kind of intermixed. Any private sector use case has a lot of government involvement and vice versa. So we basically identified, okay, what are these citizen journeys that impact the lives of citizens most and how to make those citizen journeys seamless and frictionless. Then once we identified these journeys, we kind of said, okay, let's try to see if we can make sectors out of these. So obvious sectors were healthcare, trade finance, logistics, I would say. Then we have banking, then we have education. So we kind of divided these in these sectors. And once these sectors were kind of finalized, we have had about 12 sectors in our case, then the rest was pretty easy as to what would be the stakeholders in that sector who would be members of that network. So for healthcare, it was the health department, the hospitals, the insurance companies, the pharmaceutical company importers and the pharmacies, they became the healthcare network. Similarly, an education network was involved. So that is the approach that we took.
Okay, so I suggest if there are questions about the or comments about the submission proposal itself, I would ask the group to comment on it now, and if not, we can move straight to your presentation, because it seems like it's bleeding one into the other anyway. So group, do you have any more questions about the proposal itself, or shall we just wait for Dr. Munir to send it out? Okay, going once, going twice. Okay, so Dr. Munir, let me try make, we are already seeing your screen. Yes, we can see your screen. So if you can start the presentation, that would be great. And thank you so much.
How much time do I have? How much time do I have, Martin?
I would suggest, I would suggest that given that it's 25 past, you can do maximum to 30 minute presentation, and then we'll have 5 minutes for questions. But if you want to finish earlier, then we'll have more time for questions.
So basically, first I wanted to cover two AD experiences. One was the use cases, and other, which was a subject which we discussed last time, which was the policy framework. So I wanted to kind of also share what we have done so far on the policy framework, but then I realized I would not have enough time, so I split it into two. The policy presentation I can always do next time. So I'll start with the use cases. Basically, as I said, we started with in October 2016, where after a lot of consultation, the rulers in Dubai, they kind of gave a mandate to the government entities that by 2020, they wanted all applicable city transactions to be on blockchain. And then there was a subsequent mandate, which was to be a completely paperless city by 2021. So, blockchain in a way enabled that vision of being completely paperless by 2021. And, even though paperless does not only mean just elimination of papers, but actually it's optimization of processes. But just in Dubai government, we'll be saving 1 billion papers by 2021 based on the plans that we have made. And a very important thing we realized was that even in cities like Dubai, where smart services are very prevalent, our average time of an average individual in Dubai is 40 hours per annum that he or she is spending in kind of trying to get some government services or the other. And by kind of making these experiences seamless, that's what we are trying to save also. So as I said, we started looking at these once this mandate was given in 2016 as to the areas, what city experiences we should look at transforming. We kind of benchmarked a lot of other countries, including Estonia. We were very impressed with what they have done. I'm not sure if people are aware of the Estonian model, but what Estonia has implemented, a guard time based blockchain solution or guard time solution. Basically, what it does is it creates a hash of all city transactions of that day, and the master hash of that day becomes a public record, which is published in the next day's newspaper. And they are doing that for like over a decade now. So all city transactions, all the government, all transactions that are happening in the country have a daily hash, and that can be verified against that. And that hash is stored in a distributed ledger. So that was Estonia's implementation. So we were very impressed with what they have done. So when we were looking at it, we kind of divided into multiple sectors. Housing was a sector, economy, education, healthcare, immigration, tourism, transport, energy, and water. So these were kind of the initial cities or sectors that we kind of came up with. So kind of what we did early 2017 was analyze these experiences, defined pilots for that we had to implement. So last year we did a few pilots, and now from this year we're kind of taking a lot of these pilots production, while at the same time we looked at putting a technology blueprint. So we actually wanted to initially, the first reaction, the first approach was, okay, let's come up with a single protocol that we would implement all solutions on. And then there was always a debate because there were so many other solution providers and other entities who were using other protocols. So initially we decided that we will be like in a two protocol situation, and we decided on Hyperledger Fabric and a permissioned version of Ethereum. But we kind of realized that for all of the use cases that we were seeing, that it made sense to be in a permissioned network. So that's how we initially decided. And then we decided that maybe it would be appropriate to provide a platform as a service. And we are now in the final stages of implementing the Hyperledger Fabric blockchain platform as a service, a private cloud that we are implementing right now. And while in parallel, we were also trying to come up with policies and a policy framework. So I'll skip some of the irrelevant slides here. When we were looking at on the government strategy side, we identified these use cases. We were building a platform as a service. And then we realized that we also need to have some foundational blocks. One of the critical foundation blocks that we realized was an equivalent of a digital vault. So along with digital ID, all which of course will be the basis of this, of providing citizen data. So we actually implemented a mobile seamless digital ID solution all across the country, which has recently gone live. And now associated with that ID, we are implementing some foundational blocks, one of them being the digital vault. And the idea is that any credential, any privilege that anybody has, when there is a process, for example, I go and I start a process of getting a driver's license. So eventually that driver's license metadata is associated with my ID in the vault. Or if I get I buy a property, so the actual property ownership certificate that comes on my vault. So because then other use cases will actually use these credentials or attributes to my ID, which is part of my vault. So we realize that vault is a very key foundational element that we have to build, which we are currently doing on Hyperledger Fabric. and of course a policy framework. Then around that, we had a lot of focus on industry creation, creating the local ecosystem. And we had blockchain-specific accelerators that we launched in Dubai. So we have Dubai Future Accelerator. We have about 100-plus companies who have kind of signed contracts as part of that accelerator. Then we have Dubai Smart City Accelerator, where there are 30-plus companies who are now part of the accelerator program, running various blockchain, implementing various blockchain use cases. Initially, once we did it, we had over 100-plus use cases or 100-plus journeys that we have identified. And in the first stage, we are actually taking 21 government use cases and 10 private sector use cases, which we are actually going to take live shortly. Some of the examples are for the land department in Dubai. We are taking this renting, the end-to-end journey of renting a property, renting an apartment in Dubai, taking that completely paperless and on blockchain. So that is from the point of identifying an apartment, signing a digital contract, making the payments using a smart check, which actually is a smart contract with the bank. And then based on that, getting the rental certificate. And now once you have the rental certificate, which is part of your vault, now based on that, you can do other things, get power connection. Or for example, in Dubai, if I'm an immigrant and I have to kind of call my family over or get a family visa, I can only do that once I have a place for them to stay, meaning a rental contract. So those use cases then are triggered with this. There is a very interesting use case which the Power Authority in Dubai is working on, which is charging of electric vehicles. So EV charging and using tokens for that. Then there is a use case which is managing the life cycle of a vehicle, entire end-to-end life cycle of a vehicle and obtaining NOCs. We are now implementing a use case on obtaining a commercial, it's a 15-minute company formation, which is on blockchain. So obtaining a commercial license. Then we have a use case of, I'll go over the details of these use cases, reconciliation of the payments that we collect for the entire government that is implemented on Hyperledger Fabric. We have a use case of notary services on blockchain. Then we have issuance of wills. This is a use case which we are currently elaborating, working on. Then licensing of medical institutions and doctors, e-prescriptions. Then Dubai Municipality is doing a food chain project, which is farm to fork, the complete provenance and life cycle of a food item. So that is a use case which is being worked on. And with Dubai Education Authority, there are two very interesting use cases. One is enrolling and management of students, which is on blockchain. And the other is a very interesting, it's a cute concept of a smart city university on blockchain. The idea is that you have various credentials issued by various learning mechanisms. What if the credential provider is on blockchain and provides you validated credential on, which is on this blockchain? And then some accreditation body does the equivalence of that and you get a certain credential based on that equivalence. And that is all happening on a blockchain network. So we're calling it a smart city university. It's an interesting concept. We are currently kind of doing some design sprints and have a plan of going production in the next 4 months of an MVP in the next 3 months. So as again, some of these use, you're seeing the slides clearly, right? Hello?
Yes.
Hello?
Yes, hello.
There was no response. I just wanted to confirm. So some of the use cases which I may be repeating myself here is on the land side, we have renting and buying of property, obtaining housing. Then we have obtaining a commercial license. On the education side, we have enrolling of students, smart city university, and validating education academic credentials. This is a startup which is implementing the validating of academic credentials on blockchain. On the tourism side, we are looking at secondary market ticketing and the purchasing of event tickets on blockchain. Then we have a couple of use cases on donations to the charity and use of those funds, which is on blockchain. Then there are other pilots which are not done as part of our program, but which other blockchain companies have actually implemented in Dubai area. One, of course, is securing of medical records that Gartine has done. Dubai Commodity Exchange has done diamond trading use case, where actually there's something called a Kimberley certificate, which ensures that the diamond is not from war zone or conflict zone. Then IBM is working with, there's a large trade finance network that has been formed. So customs, Dubai ports and shipping, Dubai airports, and other relevant entities have formed the group, formed the network, a trade network. And now they are implementing multiple use cases on blockchain around the trade finance and logistics part. I'll give you an example of I'll go over the details of some of the use cases which we have implemented on Hyperledger Fabric. One of them is the payment settlement and reconciliation. So we basically, as Government of Dubai, run a payment gateway which actually collects all of the government payments that a citizen normally does. Traffic fines, bills, utility bills, these payments go through this network, through this payment gateway. So we currently do about roughly about $3 billion of transaction per annum that we collect. So on this, what happened was that normally what used to happen was that after the consumer has paid, there was an exchange of files that was between the departments. Somebody needs to mute, I guess. So there was an exchange of, for reconciliation, it was done by exchange of files. And then later on, the settlement was done by movement of funds between the Department of Finance and the service provider and the actual service providers in between. So this process, let's say the payment lag was that the consumer will use our smart service to make the payment. We will provide the options to the consumer to make that payment. Hello? And the consumer will actually then select an account to pay, and the payment is made. Once the payment is made, the settlement and recon process was very tedious. It used to take about 45 days. So the Department of Finance will do a file exchange and the matching of files between the departments. That's just how the recon and settlement normally works. What we did was we implemented a Hyperledger-based solution where the exchange of files and the fund was on a blockchain network that we built. And the funds movement was then done through a smart contract. So from that 45-day process, we actually implemented that.
First off, you need some ideas. Try and determine what method you want to build. Next, figure out the methods you'll be using to create the design. I'm going to draw and take pictures, and then...
Someone needs to mute themselves.
Yeah. So basically, then what we did was this, that the settlement part was happening as on blockchain. The reconciliation part was happening on blockchain, and then settlement was done as a smart contract between the Department of Finance and other government departments. And we built these dApps for all parties which were integrating with their ERP systems. This was basically a vendor implemented this for us, so I'm just showing you some of the screenshots. Cypher is the product that the vendor implemented, which was a blockchain solution. So once the payment is initiated, it's received, the issuer banks authorize it. That is all on blockchain. Once the auth is received, At that point, it was reconciled and the payment was confirmed to the biller's ERP. So all reconciled transactions are then auto-grouped via smart contract. Department of Finance still has the same control of batch processing that it does, and the disbursement of funds to the service providers happen instantaneously. So this basically saved about a process which was a 45-day long process was automated. So I'll, in the interest of time, I'm going to go slightly faster now. Then we had on the housing side, we actually have done a complete life cycle of property. So from the point of land allocation, so you create a property registry on blockchain, then the master plan is approved, then there's a property resale, property construction. Eventually, an electronic title is becomes part of the digital property. At that point, the next step starts, either the property is sold or rented. So the whole process of the rental or the whole process of purchase and sale purchase, or even for short-term leasing, will happen. Now, this is something where when we were imagining this, we initially came up with up till here that the land allocation, master plan approval, property construction and the escrow and the digital property, and then the rental and the selling process. We were initially imagined this when we were doing design thinking sessions. You know, once we created the network, the very first requirement that came up is, okay, why not? Now we are capable, so why not actually allow fractional ownership of this property? So now we said, okay, now we are actually working with Sandbox, a regulatory sandbox in Dubai, to actually use the same chain to actually now take it forward for fractional ownership of property. By bringing this whole process on blockchain, we are still in, you know, in the process of doing it, but we are estimated, you know, significant savings just in the sale part. We had 30,000 units that were sold in 2016, and they were, you know, we're talking about roughly about 10 million pieces of paper just every month per annum saved just by bringing the sale process on block, or digitizing the sale process. I know that a lot of it is digitization of the process, and blockchain has a small but significant portion contribution to these targets that we're trying to achieve. So this is one use case that we are doing. Then we have a use case of smart mortgage. This is a pilot that we are doing with a bank here where, you know, the lien is marked against a property on blockchain. So this end-to-end mortgage process is what we are building on blockchain right now. In the interest of time, I'll skip the technical details. This is, again, something we are implementing on Hyperledger Fabric. Feel free to stop me if you want. Anyway, then some pilots that we are doing on the economic development side are, one is there's a POC that we done was shipment and transformation of cargo through Dubai. This was a use case which we tried to implement on blockchain. And now, as I told you, we build this trade network, and we are actually coming up. We are having very multiple design thinking sessions. We are actually coming up with network-based use cases for this. Coming up with there is a production that we work. There was actually an idea. Sorry. Hello. Somebody had a question.
Somebody perhaps needs to mute. There's some sort of robotic voice in the background that sometimes interrupts. Okay.
Then there was this use case which we looked at, which was diamond trading using Kimberley certificates. So in DMCC, Dubai Merchant Commodity Exchange, there was a pilot done that no diamonds can be traded without actually having a Kimberley certificate on the chain. Kimberley certificate basically is that the diamond is not from war zone. Then we are doing the title transfer against using smart token and smart contracts for DMCC. We are just working on the legalities of a use case for digital wills. So DIFC is a special jurisdiction within UAE, within Dubai, which has common law, which is where English law works, Dubai International Financial Center. It's a free zone within UAE, within Dubai. And a pilot that we are working, so DIFC has their own courts. And now we are working with DIFC courts for our smart will on blockchain. The concept is for all expats, most of their beneficiaries of their will are not in country. They would be somewhere outside because they're expats. And Dubai is heavily a city which has a much more number of expats than they have the local citizens. So what we are doing is to make this process seamless for them. They can opt into DIFC courts and put their wills, which will be a smart contract. So all of their property ownership, money with the banks and others, they will be governed by that smart contract, which we are trying to implement. So all one has to do is just die, and the smart contract is going to take care of disbursement of their assets or transfer of their assets to their beneficiaries. So that is a very interesting use case which we're currently working on for wills. There are various pilots that we have seen. One of the banks had done a cross-border remittance transaction with India, which is already implemented. Now what we have done is we have formed a working a group with a network with the banks. So we have recently formed a new a network. All of the banks are now part of that network. And we are doing two use cases which are very significant right now. One is shared KYC between the banks. This is a pilot we are currently working on. And the other actually is various bank, you know, validation and verification of banking instruments. So a banking instrument is something like a bank guarantee, a letter of credit, a PA, purchase a pay order, or a check. So all member banks will be putting their metadata of their instruments on this chain for others to consume. So if a bank one or a bank two has to kind of accept a banking instrument from bank one, it will be on the same blockchain and it will validate it, so it will eliminate a lot of fraud. So these are two use cases which we initially came up. We built a network and kind of came up with two of the lowest hanging fruits and the easiest use cases to implement, and those are what we are currently implementing with this network. And then of course more complex use cases are going to come up and evolve. On the education side, we are mostly working on education credentials and validation of those. So that's basically what we're doing on the side, on the education side. On the healthcare, there are two important use cases which we're working on. One is once we have brought in medical records, digitized them. So sharing of these medical records, e-claims between the for the insurance side. Then we are working on a use case for healthcare providers licensing and credentialing on blockchain. And in future, we were exploring a use case of prescriptions to be on blockchain. However, we found it to be very complex, so we're still kind of struggling with it and trying to come up with how to implement that use case. On the energy and water side, as I said, we are doing this EV charging use case. I'm doing some sharing some global benchmarking, but what we are doing is EV charging right now. And the second part is we are looking into a use case for somebody who is generating green energy using panels to actually be selling that back to the grid and getting credits on blockchain. So that's something which we're looking on. On the tourism side, we are doing two use cases. One is a secondary ticketing market on blockchain. And the other is we are coming up with the concept of a loyalty and gamification program for the visitors using Dubai points, Dubai tourism points. On the safety and justice side, so far, as I said, we are working on this use case for DApps, for blockchain-based wills. On the transport and logistics side, we have various pilots that have been done. We are looking at various cross-border collaborations. And now, kind of as I said, we built this network for Dubai trade. And based on this network is now coming up with multiple use cases. We have identified and prepared a roadmap for 8 use cases so far. So this is something that has happened so far in Dubai. As I mentioned, that we have identified about 110 citizen journeys. So citizen journey is not a service. By that, I mean, I have to get a driver's license. That is not a journey. That is just a service which is part of a journey. A journey is, I am moving to Dubai and I have to take a car on the road. That is a journey. So that journey will include me acquiring the driver's license, me acquiring and buying a car, me getting the car insured, me getting the, you know, what you call the RFID sticker so that I pay this road taxes and others. So this entire thing, life is a journey. So we identified these 110 journeys, and now we are actually taking each a journey by journey approach. And you're saying, okay, how to take that entire journey and make it entirely seamless and frictionless for the citizen. So that is the approach we are taking. And there we have identified a lot of services that are going to be implemented. And there's a roadmap up to 2020 and 2021 to actually complete and take all of these journeys completely production. While we are doing this and we are in the interim stage, a lot of times things are evolving, because as I mentioned, that what we have learned is once you build the network and have this interim state, certainly the future state changes significantly. So that's something I just wanted to share. This is what we have done. And as part of this forum, what I really hope to see is to kind of learn from what others are doing and maybe identify some very interesting collaboration opportunities and cross-border opportunities which we should be looking at and working on. Thank you.
This is very, very interesting. We have 5 minutes for questions, so please feel free to start asking questions now. Let me just quickly check the chat. Oh no, there are no questions in the chat, so if you have questions, please feel free to ask them now.
This is Nate De Niro. I just gave a presentation yesterday on blockchain and smart cities at the US NIST Global Tech Jam, which is actually it's actually a collaboration across borders amongst cities around the world that are doing pilot projects and have a community of different work groups and super groups that are investigating various things that line up specifically with what you're talking about. And I'm working on with another group, and Marta, I might see you in Bristol sometime soon here. But working with another group that's developing projects in Saudi Arabia and in Dubai. And part of the whole structure of this thing is moving our processes from a hierarchical approach or a hierarchical design to a holarchical design where, they're more cooperative processes. So there's a whole framework on top of it. I'd be very interested to talk to you, and at the same time, your projects and the Hyperledger community have a lot to offer this community that I've came in touch with yesterday, because they're the other collection of cities struggling with, well, how do we get programs started? What are the things we should be looking at? Privacy, all that sort of stuff. So it's very very encouraging. I'm sort of blown away because I've only caught the last 15 minutes of your presentation, and I've just spent 2 days with, you know, hundreds of people working on the same stuff in cities around the world. So,
wow, yes, that certainly is the idea. I guess would love to collaborate and kind of share more with others and kind of learn from what they are doing in this area. But one very important subject which you mentioned is the concern with privacy and how you're going to handle a lot of these issues. And that's where the policy comes into play. What we have realized is that the biggest challenge is going to be putting the public sector specific policies for blockchain. This is a big challenge, so which we have identified. What we have done last year was we came up with a policy with a high level framework for blockchain policies. So there were 10 areas, the policy areas that we identified. Well, let's say membership, what would membership policies be like? Who should be part of the network? What should be the financing policy? What should be the privacy policies? When it talks about blockchain and smart contract, what is the, what you call arbitration policies and so on and so forth. So,
right.
And I would love to share the framework that we have done in the next session, that we have a presentation on the framework. And now we are actually in the process of engaging some consultants to actually work on detailed policies based on that policy framework which we developed last year. So some of those policies will be kind of very general, city-wide, and in some cases, there would be network-specific policies that we have to come up with. And that is an area where we would love to learn from what others are thinking in this area, because this is, we find that as the biggest success or failure factor for our blockchain strategy.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm sort of, I don't know what to say. I mean, this is all, it's like there's all this stuff that's coming together all at once. So it's really interesting because this group of people needs kind of what you've done, and you're willing to share it, which is awesome. And they also, you know, we sort of need them as well because they community of need and also their own experiences and that come from the different cities that they live in around the world as well to allow us to sort of test these ideas and advance the state of the art. You know, it's awesome.
More than happy to elaborate on that.
Terrific. And my name is Nate DeNiro and I'm with UBase. I guess we could probably connect through the list. But, yeah.
Okay, I'm afraid that we are running out of time. So I suggest that if there are any more questions to Dr. Sahil, you should all send them to our mailing list and we'll make sure that they get answered. Thank you everyone for participating. It was a real pleasure, Dr. Mooner. Thank you so much for your presentation. And thank you, Rose and Bobby and everyone for the survey. So let's make sure that we now fill it out. And have a great day.
Thank you, everyone. Have a great day. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Thanks again.